Pratap Chikkanna is a farmer in Kudugurahalli, a village that's roughly 5 hours by road from Bengaluru. Chikkanna's family has been in the business of growing cardamom for years. Now, Chikkanna is old school. Until a few years ago, he would rely on cash for his everyday transactions. But sometime in 2018, he decided to go digital and open a bank account with a public sector bank. It was a good decision because today Chikkanna uses the bank account, among other things, for subsidies from the government that are directly transferred to him. But there's a problem. Updates from the bank come to him via SMSs, and Chikkanna can't understand what's in these messages because he doesn't understand English. So he walks 6 kilometers to the nearest town of Sakleshpur, where he can show the SMS to someone who speaks English, who translates that message for him. Now that trip takes him more than an hour each way, which means that he loses both time and energy and nearly half a day's work. All because he can't read English. Recently, I was reading in the paper about Binoy Kumar Singh, a retired government employee based in Kolkata, who's been dabbling in the stock market for years. But he too believes he misses out on many good opportunities in the market simply because he doesn't speak very good English. Everything from corporate announcements to IPO prospectuses are issued only in English. And if you don't know how to read and write English fluently, you're locked out of having any meaningful access to them. And this is problematic because less than 10% of India speaks English. This means that over 1 billion people will, like Chikkanna, like Singh, not be able to understand any interactions exclusively in English. As shocking as it is, this is just one way in which language barriers come in the way of Indians trying to live a decent and dignified life. You simply have to cast your eyes around to see a myriad of these examples. Imagine a construction worker from Odisha going to Bengaluru to find work, or a citizen from interior Nagaland trying to interact with the state government. Think of an enthusiastic young woman from Purulia in West Bengal who speaks Santhali at home, trying to learn about the latest developments in artificial intelligence. Simply calling this a language barrier undersells the problem. It is an unscalable language wall, and the wall extends so far and so deep that it's a labyrinth from which there is no escape. Of course, this is not a new problem. People have been attempting to solve the issues of language access for perhaps centuries, but in painstakingly slow and analog ways. However, interestingly, in the last few years, developments in the world of artificial intelligence have made researchers and scientists wonder if AI can be the next bright hope in solving the issue of language access. And that's what I want to focus on in this episode. Can AI be the game changer here? If not solve, can AI at least help us make a head start in breaking down these language barriers? From ATS Studio and Microsoft India, this is Paradigm Shift. Stories of innovation shaped by intelligence. I'm Harsha Bhogle.
Long years ago, we made a tryst with destiny. And now the time comes when we shall redeem our pledge. Not only...
The 8th schedule of the Constitution of India recognizes 22 Indian languages. But this is not even the tip of the iceberg. Depending on whom you ask and how they choose to define what a language is, the number of languages spoken in India can vary widely. Let me give you an example. In 2010, the People's Linguistic Survey of India conducted a volunteer-driven survey all over the country. Over a period of 2 years, from 2010 to 2012, 3,500 volunteers fanned out across the length and breadth of India to document the various languages spoken. And at the end of it all, they came up with a report that was 35,000 pages in total, spread across 50 volumes. And their conclusion? There are 780 languages spoken in India, including 480 tribal languages. Officially though, because of a somewhat arbitrary decision taken in 1971, we only recognize 122 languages in India. That arbitrary decision was to count languages with 10,000 or more speakers. Despite all of this, India is still in the top 3 countries in the world with the most number of languages spoken. And we have a big problem. Most of us are not able to understand most of us. So what kind of a difference can artificial intelligence and machine learning make here? Very simply put, artificial intelligence first enables computing devices to understand what you're saying, or reading, or seeing, and second, to translate it. We take for granted the smart assistant on our phones today. Our phone understands us speaking not just in English, but in many other languages. It almost doesn't matter what your phone's language setting is. It can still listen to your command in whatever language you speak, understand it and translate it so that the smartphone can carry out your instructions. This same technology helps you talk to someone who doesn't speak your language. For instance, if you're using a translation app to communicate with a cab driver in a foreign country, it can help you get technical support and advice from an automated chatbot. At a much larger scale, this also means it can instantly translate and caption instructional videos and documentaries, transcribe audio lectures, translate books and documents, and interpret between a teacher and a student who speak different languages. The potential applications of language AI are therefore limitless. But while there are many uses for these language technologies, everything depends on getting bigger, better, and more capable algorithms. And at the core of this technology is natural language processing using deep neural networks.
So natural language processing, artificial intelligence, speech technologies, these are very big words. They're buzzwords right now.
This is Kalika Bali, a principal researcher at Microsoft Research India. Her specialty is speech and language technology. In fact, she looks at the use of linguistic models for building technology that offers a more natural human-computer as well as computer-mediated interaction.
Everybody is talking about what exactly is NLP or natural language processing. So in very simple terms, this is the part of computer science engineering that makes machines process, understand, and generate natural language, which is the language that humans speak. When you're speaking to a voice-based digital assistant in your phone, it's NLP that makes it work.
So how does NLP work?
In a very, very basic way, it's about data. So a huge amount of data of how actually humans use language is then processed by certain algorithms and techniques that make the machines learn the patterns of natural language of humans.
Artificial intelligence for language technology has existed for some time now. But before deep neural networks became the standard, the nature of the technology was entirely different.
The amount of expertise that was required from a language side at that time, you know, creating all kinds of very curated data sets, different kinds of tools, you know, part of speech tagging and parsing and all those kind of language specific tools that you had to build for each language, plus the machine learning part at that time was also feature-based machine learning. Even if it's data-driven, you had to fine-tune, you had to do feature engineering to say which features are more important and which features are less important in the model, right?
All this changed with the arrival of deep neural networks. Deep neural networks are part of a larger trend in AI called deep learning. Broadly, these neural networks are built to approximately resemble the neural networks of human beings, something biological and organic. Before deep neural networks, artificial intelligence worked on the basis of rules and actions. Programmers would set out a task and define a set of rules that the algorithms would need to follow and a number of actions it could choose to do to achieve the task. For example, you could feed an algorithm all the rules and moves of chess to train it to play chess. This kind of artificial intelligence was complex to configure and needed a great deal of human involvement for somewhat narrow results. Deep learning changed all this. Deep learning enables computers to learn on their own, and that part is important. On their own. Computers now build analytical models automatically by going over large sets of data rather than predefined rules and actions. You don't tell the machine what to do. The machine figures it out for itself using the neural network. And these neural networks are made up of many nodes, much like the human brain is made up of neurons. These nodes are arranged in layers. For instance, there will be an input layer, an output layer, and a number of hidden layers that do all the computational heavy lifting. Nodes within individual layers are connected to each other and to adjacent layers. The more the layers a network has, the deeper and more complex it is. These networks can therefore learn to see, hear, recognize, and understand things if you give it a big enough data set to go over. In this way, deep neural networks are a far cry from the old machine learning algorithms that needed a lot of training and hand-holding.
These neural networks work really well compared to any models or techniques we had in the past. And the accuracy that we get is very, very high compared to some of the things that we did earlier.
Deep neural networks require two things to work really well. One, a large amount of data. And two, a massive amount of computational power to crunch through all that data. Compared to technologies that came before, you need several orders of magnitude more computing power and data. The problem of computing power is universal, and it has a universal solution. For all practical purposes, this is a solved problem, and the situation will organically continue to improve as long as Moore's law continues to operate in some form. Actually, let me explain that quickly. Moore's law refers to an observation Gordon Moore made in 1965, in which he said the number of transistors in a dense integrated circuit doubles about every 2 years. So computers essentially are getting smaller and faster quite rapidly. And which is why availability of computing power is not necessarily a pressing problem. The problem of data, however, is far more complex and varies substantially from language to language. Deep neural networks work very well with languages that have a lot of data, both text and voice. They work so well that in a language like English, with a lot of training data, deep neural networks have reached an astonishing level of capability where they can even generate eerily human-like passages of text on the basis of a few keywords or prompts. In the middle of the pandemic in 2020, a language generator algorithm called GPT-3 caused a big sensation and caught everyone's attention.
This week, The Guardian published an article written by artificial intelligence. The purpose of this exercise was to use the latest state-of-the-art OpenAI 3 to write an essay to convince humans AI comes in peace.
GPT-3, or the third generation generative pre-trained transformer, is a neural network machine learning model trained using internet data to generate any type of text. Once this was released for free on the internet, everyone went bonkers. People were designing websites by talking to a computer in plain English, asking computers to find completely obscure things on the internet as you describe them. And like we heard before, publications like The Guardian even used the GPT-3 AI model to write an entire article about itself. The GPT-3 language model was trained using over 175 billion parameters. Parameters are values that a learning algorithm can change independently as it learns. And usually, the number of parameters in a model is a proxy for the model's complexity. In order to train this massive model, its developers used data sourced from the biggest set of text ever amassed, including a mixture of books, Wikipedia articles, and billions of pages of text from the internet. It was this sheer scale that made GPT-3 work almost like magic. But all of this was possible because this was English and because there was tons of data available. But the world of Indian languages is a far cry from this dazzling scenario. The problem, as you can imagine, is a lack of data. This is a problem that affects all Indian languages to varying degrees. In a 2020 paper, Kalika, the language researcher at Microsoft, and her colleagues had categorized languages into 6 tiers, ranging from tier 0, the left behinds, for languages that have next to no resources available, such as Santhali or Gondi, to tier 5, the winners, for languages like English, where there's a rich corpus of resources available.
In India, even the most highly resourced languages, like Hindi, would come in somewhere between a 3 and a 4. There is Bengali, and maybe one other language at 3. Many other languages are at 2. And then you have a language like Gondi, which is a 1. But you consider the fact that the speaker population of Gondi is 3 million. You compare that to a highly resourced language like Welsh, which has less than 1 million speakers. There are lots of languages around the world that have fewer speakers than many of the low-resourced languages in India. And those languages have technologies available.
This problem is being approached from opposite ends for different languages. At the ground level, there are multiple initiatives that focus on assembling and building up resources in the languages that currently lack them, the Class 0 and the Class 1 languages. At the opposite, high-tech end, is the development of what is known as massively multilingual models that can work across a large number of languages and include some of the better-resourced Indian languages, like Hindi or Bengali. An example of this second case is the Turing ULR version 5, developed by Microsoft's Project Turing. This is a machine learning model that can work across a whopping 100 languages. This model uses a massive 2.2 billion parameters and stands out as state-of-the-art in a world full of multilingual models. The ULR can be trained up to 100 times faster than its predecessors.
These large language models are a new revolution that we are having in natural language processing. They offer a very interesting promise even for low-resource languages.
This is Dr. Monojit Chaudhary, Principal Data and Applied Scientist with Turing.
Until very recently, industry was not very interested on Indian languages. And when I say until recently, I mean, let's say, till 2000. You know, in 1990s and up to the beginning of the millennium, the argument that was put forward was in India, whoever uses technology, they also know English.
This changed with the arrival of smartphones a little over a decade ago. At this point, India just leapfrogged technologically. Without ever using laptops or PCs, people in India jumped straight into using smartphones, and there was suddenly a need for Indian language support. This meant that a lot of companies started to port their interfaces to Indian languages. Initially, this was in Hindi, but now the other languages are also coming along.
There are two kinds of data that you need when you train these language models. One is what we call unlabeled data. Unlabeled data is just running text. So Wikipedia would be unlabeled data, or you just go to Twitter and download a bunch of Hindi tweets, and that will be unlabeled data. You can collect unlabeled data relatively easily, as long as digitized data exists on the web or somewhere. And then there is more expensive form of data, which is labeled data. Labeled data is specific to a task that you want to solve. For instance, suppose you want to do translation. Labeled data would mean that you need translation pairs. For instance, you have a sentence in English and then its translation in Hindi, and you have millions of such pairs. That gives you what we call a parallel corpus, and then you can use this corpus to train a machine translation model. Now, as you can imagine, getting this kind of data, labeled data, is so much harder than getting unlabeled.
Like Kalika had mentioned earlier, apart from one or two Indian languages, the rest are all severely lacking in resources to varying degrees. And you need these resources to build any sort of NLP system. This is where the massively multilingual models come in. What you need for this is a large amount of unlabeled data. Once you build such a multilingual model and you have data in, let's say, a highly resourced language like English, you can use that to get a basic system for all the 100 languages in the model.
It basically gives us the opportunity to build systems across languages, even if we don't have enough labeled data in the language. That is a big promise. But you know, there are languages like Santhali, where even unlabeled data doesn't exist. And we call it a class zero language. And there, we really can't do much for those languages. Our languages which have at least unlabeled data, a class two language, let's say, something with a reasonably sized Wikipedia like Telugu, Kannada, Bengali, Tamil. These languages, now you can hope to see much better technology because of these large multilingual models.
When it comes to the class 0 or class 1 languages, the problem of lack of resources is being tackled from the ground up. This is done by a number of projects that aim to actually create and compile the resources that are going to be needed to eventually develop language technologies in these low-resourced languages. One prominent effort in bridging the resource gap is the Indic NLP suite that is being developed by an NGO called AI for Bharat. Set up by two professors at IIT Madras, along with a researcher at Microsoft, Indic NLP is a suite of tools that includes a large corpora of language data in various Indian languages. This means parallel corpora, where there are parallel translated sentences from English to various Indian languages. Indic NLP also includes models and tools which can help to translate from English to Indian languages and vice versa. There is another such effort, and that's Microsoft's own Project Karya. Project Karya was launched in 2017 to crowdsource language data from rural India to help with the training of language models. The idea was also to provide supplemental income to the people in the villages. But crowdsourcing isn't easy.
If you look at crowdsourcing platforms today, there are a number of challenges that actually prevent them from being accessible to people from rural communities.
This is Dr. Vivek Seshadri, a researcher at Microsoft India.
Specifically, let me describe to you three challenges. The first one is most of these platforms contain tasks only in English, and all their task descriptions, everything is in English, which is completely inaccessible to rural communities. Second of all, if you go to rural India today, the notion of digital work is completely alien to them. In fact, when we went to rural communities in our first visit and told them we will actually pay some money for completing some set of digital tasks, they looked at us in disbelief. Like, they actually didn't believe that we are going to pay them until we actually did. So there is this huge issue of awareness. And finally, there is a logistical challenge here. Most crowdsourcing platforms will assume that the end user has a computer and constant access to internet. This is actually a luxury in many rural communities in India even today.
According to an answer to a question in the Lok Sabha, India has 25,000 villages that do not even have internet access.
So the way we bridge this gap is by introducing this third component that we are calling a Karya box. Now, the Karya box is essentially a device that we will place in the village where we want to work with people. And you can think of the box as a local crowdsourcing server for that particular village. So the Karya box will essentially act as a local crowdsourcing server in the village where we have placed it. Users in the village can directly interact with the box through the Wi-Fi access point that the box will expose. So in most villages which do not have connectivity, what we observe is there are definitely people who go to nearby cities for work or even to get digital content that they can get back to the village. What we need to do is to employ someone like that who can carry the box to a location where there is internet connectivity periodically, maybe once a day or even once a week. And at that instant, when the box gets connectivity to the server, it can exchange both the responses that have been submitted already by the rural workers and also get any new tasks for the village, if any.
Once this infrastructure is set up, people are recruited to carry out simple tasks that help to build the corpus of data required.
So at the lowest level, the task is essentially for the user to read out, record themselves reading out a sentence. However, to make the task more fun, we actually made them read out stories. Some empowering stories, some stories about history of our country, some stories about popular figures like Buddha. And users really liked reading out stories as opposed to reading out random bits of sentences.
So fascinating. Project Karya is in the middle of assembling a language corpus for Marathi. Now, Marathi has 83 million speakers and has the third largest number of speakers in India after Hindi and Bengali. But despite this, very little work has been done in the area of language technology, and it is very categorically a low-resourced language. But that's not all. Project Karya then feeds into something known as Project Ellora, which stands for Enabling Low Resources Languages. Ellora combines the gamified crowdsourcing of Project Karya with the design and development of new technologies and frameworks for low resource languages. It then develops applications that helps deploy these technologies at scale in a way that will impact the community.
As machine learning and NLP practitioners, we often get caught up, you know, in an information theoretic view of the problem. For example, focusing on incremental improvement of performance on benchmarks, on capturing accurate distributions over data, and tend to forget the raison d'etre of NLP, which is to build systems that can actually add value to it.
This is Dr. Chaudhary again.
With Project Elora, we want to build models that enable people to read the news that was not written in their language, ask questions about their health when they do not have access to a doctor. And while these technology applications are more and more ubiquitous for languages with a lot of data, a large majority of languages remain resource poor and bereft of such systems. In a vast country like India, access to information thus becomes a huge concern. This lack of information means that not only do these communities not have information in domains like agriculture, healthcare, weather, etc., which could improve their quality of lives, but they may also not be aware of their basic rights as citizens of the country. The primary element in communication is information exchange. People living in less connected areas are often unable to get the kind of information they need due to various socio-economical and technological barriers. As a result, they miss out on crucial knowledge required to improve their well-being.
There's already an existing example of how this technology works, and that's CGNet Swara. CGNet Swara is a voice-based online portal that allows people in the forests of Chhattisgarh to report local news in Gondi by making a phone call. The portal is freely accessible via mobile phone or online. It allows anyone to report stories and listen to them by giving a missed call. They can also report grievances and have them resolved.
The interaction that the people have is with a computer. The computer will listen to what they have to say. Technology will classify them. They will mark several things like what is the language, what is the area or vertical under which it has to be put. And they sometimes will even summarize a little bit, and then this whole thing is available on their website. The further stages are handled by humans again, but the technology cuts down the amount of work that is required. And going forward, more and more stages of something like this can be automated using AI.
While all of this is great news, there is another massive language-based challenge that faces Indian society. A sizable chunk of the Indian population has little or no access to formal sources of knowledge when it comes to technical and specialized fields because these materials are simply not available in their local languages.
India is a multilingual country, but being multilingual doesn't mean that people are literate in multiple languages, right? People know one or two languages in which they study. So what happens as a result is that most people are hardly able to access anything beyond what is written in languages that they are literate in.
This is Dr. Shobha Satyanath, a professor of linguistics at Delhi University, whose specialty is language variation and change. Her work involves studying the various languages in India and understanding how they interact, overlap, coexist, and function.
And this restricts their worldview severely. And this applies equally to English-educated people as well, as most of us or English-educated people may not be able to access or do not need to access what is written in regional languages, for instance. So both ways, right? We hardly read or access things beyond the languages known to us simply because we are not literate in those languages.
In February 2021, the Government of India announced the setting up of the National Language Translation Mission under the Ministry of Electronics and Information Technology. The plan is to translate a range of content, including policy documents and technical and scientific knowledge, into all the 22 major languages in India. They aim to do this by building speech-to-speech machine translation and evolving a unified language interface, or ULI, for translation of Indian languages. This they'd like to do in the next 3 years to bring together multiple efforts towards Indic language technologies. Microsoft, too, is providing the technical backbone for the mission with Azure Cloud and its NLP tools. A mission of this level of ambition and scale would be impossible without AI. AI-based language technologies are also all set to transform the way that the country does business. Once a computer can understand what someone is saying in whatever language they're speaking, there's a range of tasks that these NLP-based technologies can perform which was impossible before. At the base level, there is of course text recognition and speech recognition, whether website or app run by a bank or a retail chain, can simply understand the words that someone is saying in Telugu or Kannada, or someday in Santhali or Gondi. Once the computer understands what the person is saying, the next step is for the computer to understand the semantics and the sentiment behind it. When human beings speak to each other, the words carry most of the meaning, but the context, the tone, the grammar, the situation, and many other factors can subtly or sometimes even profoundly change the meaning carried by the very same set of words. Language AI can now use the power of deep learning as well as other algorithmic models to understand the semantics, the sentiment, and the intent behind what is being said. As part of Microsoft Azure's suite of cognitive services, these AI tools allow companies from banking to retail or logistics to automotive to deploy the power of truly human-like comprehension and responses in fields as varied as customer onboarding, customer support, regulatory compliance, user interface translation, medical transcriptions, and many more seamlessly across over 40 languages. And this number continues to rise. It's time to take stock of everything I've told you so far. Over the course of this episode, you've heard about many little bits of technology that are at play. But if you zoom out a little bit, the big picture begins to get clearer. Language access is a leviathan of a problem, and multiple artificial intelligence and data gathering approaches are chipping away at this challenge from many, many different corners. As these fledgling efforts gather momentum and scale up, and eventually integrate and interoperate, it will be the first time that we start to approach a situation where previously intractable problems of access to knowledge, multilingual communication, and digital access will come close to being solved. If I had to gaze into a crystal ball 10 years ahead, the AI-powered future of languages is bright. Real-time live translations are already helping people who move to new places to communicate without friction. But when it all scales up, we can imagine people in every nook and corner of the country being able to access knowledge and use their digital devices in the language they are most comfortable with. Imagine classrooms, physical or online, where real-time live translations enable everyone to learn at a pace comfortable for them. Imagine people understanding everything that goes on in a court proceeding that will decide whether they are to live or to die. It's hard to set a time frame for how long this might take, but the pieces are taking shape and the momentum is undeniable. It's only a matter of time before they all fall together. I'm Harsha Bhogle, and you've been listening to Paradigm Shift, a podcast produced by Microsoft India in association with ATS Studio. Gaurav Vaz is our executive producer, and Archana Nathan is our producer. This podcast was made possible by the amazing team at Microsoft India, including Charu Sharma, Rohini Srivatsa, Rajat Agarwal, Sriram Parthasarthi, and Somanna Palakanda. Charu and Sri helped structure and shape the podcast with their thoughtful feedback and helping us connect the various dots. This episode was researched and written by Vinay Arvind. Vinay has also conducted all the interviews you heard. The title track, sound design, and background score for this podcast was created by Nikhil Rao and Abhijit Nath. All clips and voices used in this podcast are owned by the original creators, and we have provided links to the sources in our show notes. To read full transcripts of our episodes and additional information about the podcast, follow the link in our show notes. To learn how Microsoft is working to empower every developer to innovate, every organization to transform industries, and every individual to transform society through its differentiated Microsoft AI and innovation vision, please visit the Microsoft AI link in the show notes.